Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Hey guys, welcome back. Today I want to welcome Baron Cruz from the Charisma Matrix.
Hello.
And what's up, man? Good to have you on.
You bet.
So through Baron's best-selling courses and top-ranked YouTube channel, he inspires the realization of, wow, I really can become a social powerhouse to tens of thousands of people every day. And he's been coaching everyone from the most shy and introverted folks to those who are naturally outgoing with step-by-step processes and techniques that can be immediately implemented. And I've been following your work, man, for about a year, something like that. And we recently connected through Instagram, and just super stoked to have you on, brother.
Thanks for coming. Nice, man. Yeah, I'm excited to do it. I'm also excited to talk a little bit. I know you said you want to get into some of the business aspects of this whole thing. So that's something that I don't often get to talk about. So I'm looking forward to going there too.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of the guys listening to this, you know, they've heard me kind of spiel on about dating and relationships for over 130 episodes. So, you know, we've covered a lot of that stuff. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I was really excited to have you on, because you have a really successful business. And you know, your work is pretty broad. I know you've been working with some business people as well. So can you give us just kind of a background and tell us about your story, how you got into all this stuff?
Yeah, so kind of similar to you, I grew up, actually, I know you didn't grow up in Iowa, but I grew up there and went to grad school and then started working with hedge funds and private equity. And then when I was living in Chicago, I just saw, you know, some common mistakes that people were making socially that I thought, you know, if you just change this little thing, it's going to have a big impact. And so I got the old floodlights from Home Depot. I got two and I kind of propped them on the floor and up in the corners. And I got probably the first iPhone ever to come out at that time, and a little tripod, and just recorded a video and put it up. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't a fire in a bottle. I think it took like a year to get 100 views. I still remember the first time I got a comment. It was like a year and a half in. But I just kept doing it because I liked it. You know, I think a lot of times people say, if you're going to start a YouTube channel, you really have to enjoy it, because otherwise you'll stop. It's so true. And this is like 8 years ago. So now with the more competitive landscape, it even has to be more so, because there'll be lulls where you just don't want to put a video out every week or every 2 weeks or every month. And if you don't actually like it, if it's a chore, you just simply won't. You'll quit before you get to that kind of tipping point where it starts to grow. So anyway, so I clearly enjoyed it. I was putting a video out maybe every 3-6 months, and then it just kind of started to cascade, or I got some more interest, which motivates you to put out more content. And then I realized at that point that even though I wasn't getting massive views, I realized that, you know, people pay for traffic and they pay for clicks. And so I'm kind of wasting all of those eyeballs. So I thought, why not put out a little digital product and do that and see how it goes. And so, you know, I think a month later I sold one, and then it kind of grew into what it is today.
Dude, that's great. I mean, when I watch your YouTube channel, like, I've been kind of kicking myself for the last easily 8 years, you know, 2012, you started, it sounded like.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, I got in this business in 2007, and yeah, I was like working for one of the old school kind of dating coaching companies, went on my own in 2008, and like 2010, 2011, everyone was like, all right, you know, podcasts were growing, YouTubes were kind of popping up. I was like, yeah, I should really start a YouTube. But there was a lot of friction in my mind about, you know, where to film, what sort of background I needed. Like, I was traveling a lot. Do I need a set? And I just never really felt super comfortable, you know, with the idea of putting out consistent content video style. And I heard some really good advice. I think it was from maybe like Evan Pagan back in the day.
Yeah.
David D'Angelo for the dating guys listening. And he was like, you know, pick the genre that you've kind of feel the most comfortable in and put out content in that genre. I was like, all right, I can do a podcast. And, you know, I've been doing this podcast since like 2013 or 14. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the same time, I was like, you know, I should put out videos, but it was just, I was just traveling too much. So you know, I sometimes regret it a bit. So when I saw your channel, I was like, fuck, this guy's really like crushing it. I should have done a goddamn YouTube at the same time.
It's harder. It's way harder. I mean, you got to edit a video. It's like you have the voice and the video. There's still a lot more friction to do it. And the thing is, so many people, I read this study, I don't remember how long ago it was, but like what percentage of people are comfortable being on a podcast versus being in front of the camera? And it was like, still not many people want to hear themselves talk either. It was a small amount, but it was like 10 times less than people that are comfortable being on camera. So, I mean, you got to be comfortable putting yourself out there. I'm sure you see it with the content you put out. I mean, you open yourself up to being a human pinata when you put yourself online. And when people can pick on your appearance, not only your voice, it's just a whole nother dimension. So you got to be sure you're ready for that.
Yeah, man, the YouTube comments are brutal. I actually did like a little web series back in like 2011. It's kind of making fun of the whole dating coaching industry. Made some like videos about aliens coming to learn like how to pick up girls or something stupid like that. And the amount of like haterade I got was out of control. But you know, when I watch your videos, like, wow, this guy really like knows his stuff. He's very confident on camera. He comes across, you're a very powerful speaker. And I know that's one of your, you know, the things you teach. So, you know, were you always like that, or, you know, what were you like, you know, before you got into this stuff?
Well, so there's kind of two ways I look at it. Vocally, definitely not. And it really hurts my ego to leave some of those first videos up, but you can go back and look in 2012 and listen to what I sound like. It sounds like a totally different person. And that is the reason I leave it up, so people can kind of compare and contrast and not just think I was born with some sort of voice and it didn't improve. So I think that's important, even though it beats me up when I look at him. But socially, it's a little bit different. So I'm sure you know a lot of guys who are in the dating industry and things like that. And it seems like a very consistent story from them is they were nerdy. They couldn't get girls. They'd had enough. They decided to learn how to get girls and how to be social and have friends. And my story is different in that I actually had a lot of advantages that even the average person didn't have. My mother, very outgoing, very extroverted. You know, at the grocery store, she would just strike up conversations with people. And she was very confident and very good socially. So you saw not only somebody who is comfortable starting a conversation, but that gets good responses. So people always wanted to talk to her because she was engaging. She positioned herself as high status. So I saw that. So I'm sure that you see a lot of people, or maybe even people that you coach, that they just feel like it's not normal to start a conversation with someone they don't know. Like, why would they want to talk to them? But when it's really ingrained over and over and over that not only is it okay, but people are excited and welcoming when you approach them, that's a really powerful thing to have ingrained in your mind at a young age. And then my father is actually fairly introverted, but he's a phenomenal conversationist and has a great vocabulary. So I was kind of able to draw on both of those things to form my own kind of persona. And I realized at a young age that it afforded me a lot of advantages that most kids my age didn't have just because I was more confident and got better responses socially. So I kind of was like, wow, this is a big advantage. I don't want to not only not lose this, but I want to be able to leverage it and learn more and even ride that wave a little bit more to have it be a big impact in my life. So that's kind of what started me down the path of focusing on this kind of like as a career and as a profession.
Interesting. You know, I hear a lot of similarities in my kind of upbringing. I had a really social mom. So when you're describing your mom, I was like, oh, sounds like my mom. Really? But I had, I mean, she would talk to so many people. She would strike up a conversation with like the crosswalk guy, you know, to the point where it pissed me off. And I'm like, mom, come on, I got shit to do after school. Like, can we not talk to every person that like comes by your path? And they don't love her. And my dad, my dad was a doctor, very good at relating to people and making them feel comfortable. And, but I kind of had the opposite reaction, from a sense where I was so annoyed with my mom for starting so many conversations. I was just like, yo, can we not talk to everyone? I just kind of want to get my shit done. Wow. And it's funny, you know, how like very similar sort of situations can lead to different outcomes, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that is definitely a different outcome. But I bet that you, like at a subconscious level, still had the same thing ingrained in your mind that it's okay to talk to random people, even though you weren't super pumped about or doing it so much. If you wanted to approach someone, you even probably as a kid, you went up assuming they'd want to talk to you just because you'd seen your mom do that over and over. So that was probably something powerful you got regardless of the way you kind of perceived it, whether it be good or bad.
No, totally. And, you know, I was like the first class president of my middle school. So I was very social at a young age. And that definitely spilled over from not only from my mom, but from having two younger sisters and just constantly being around them, being around women and being in that energy of constantly, you know, just communicating.
Well, you did have a lot of advantages because I have a friend who has like five sisters, and just from being around women so much, he's just so comfortable with it. You can see it's just second nature, just like some guy who's been swimming his whole life. You see him in the water, they're just so fluid. It's like they were born in there. I think that is an advantage. So you really did have a lot of advantages socially. That's cool.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny. I think back on it. A lot of the reason why I think I kind of got into this whole world, you know, not to go like too deep, but it was the validation that I would get from other guys going out and meeting women. That was a lot of the kind of the driver, even more so than the women, because I was always, you know, kind of confident with women and just comfortable around women, but I didn't have that connection with guys. And that was one of the weird things that I really got out of being in the, you know, kind of like the self-improvement men's growth industry, was that connection with other guys. Cause you know, I got that from sports a bit, but I think guys really kind of struggle for that, especially in the US. You know, it's guys don't really have that male bonding platform. Did you experience anything like that? Or did you have like a solid social circle of other dudes growing up?
Yeah, I really did. I really did have a good group of friends. And it's kind of funny, like you hear most people after high school, they maybe stay in touch with one person, but I'm seriously pretty consistently in touch with like 10 people from my high school. So I really did have that. I was pretty active in sports too. And I think that kind of helps with the camaraderie, and it helps you kind of foster a little bit deeper relationships than just like maybe some superficial ones that you would form in class or being partners or something with that. So that really
was sports. I think sports is like the biggest indicator of guys, kind of like their social status. Cause you learn social hierarchies, you learn how to like interact with other guys and how to kind of carry yourself, how to take shit from dudes.
Oh, that's a huge one. Yes. Yes. And how to defend yourself against guys talking down to you and whatnot. Yeah.
Totally. What sports did you play?
I actually played basketball. You know, I'm 6'4", about 225. You'd think I played football, but I was at a school that had like 450 in your graduating class. So I was actually the biggest guy. So I played the five. So I really was into basketball. And I quit all the other sports. I played a little tennis and did a little Muay Thai, still do a little Muay Thai kickboxing, but basketball was the big one. How about you?
Yeah. I played ice hockey, which was kind of rare growing up in Southern California, but Gretzky came in like, you know, 1990 or 91 or whatever. So hockey got real big. Yeah. And, you know, that's a like fuck them up, you know, get hit sort of sport. So that was great for socialization. I was a little guy too. So,
You know, that's like great for social status. Like in Chicago, I know a couple hockey players, and I mean, they're arguably more popular when they head out and get more attention than a lot of the other sports. So that's cool.
Totally. Totally. So tell me more about the, you know, the vocal power stuff, the vocal tonality. That's such a huge component. I mean, I used to have my like number one, I don't know, call him a wingman, but you know, best friend, like he had this really dominant, powerful voice, and girls would always within like 3 to 5 minutes of conversation comment on his voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of those things, not just when it comes to dating, but just in general, like if you can command a room with your voice, there's so much power in that there, you know, and it's not one of the things that's really talked about a whole lot.
Right. Right. It's so hard to fake because I feel like there's two components of a good voice. And number one that everyone thinks of is how deep is it? How strong is it? How powerful is it? That's one. And that's important, but more important is what you're communicating with your voice, because it's really hard to fake the little kind of micro calibrations that you need to when you're truly confident. So I'm sure you've heard a lot, like a guy like Ben Shapiro, he's a political talking head. Yep. He arguably has one of the worst voices on the planet.
Yeah, he really does. It's like a nerdy Jew.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable. Like if he wasn't confident, he could be the biggest nerd on the planet. I think he's a super smart guy and I like the way that he looks at things. But as far as like he separates a lot of his own personal beliefs from politics, I think that's very rare nowadays. But he has a terrible voice, but he sounds competent. And so the most important thing is what you're communicating. So you don't have to have some deep, powerful voice to come across as super competent and for it to be a big asset when you're talking to people. But like you said, it can be a huge benefit, right? You can get compliments, it can draw attention, but also the kind of sad part is you could have the best game on the planet. You could understand, you could have gone out 7 nights a week for 25 years, know every situation or the right move. And if you don't have a strong voice or a competent voice, all of that just loses so much power. It almost becomes ineffective. So it's something that you almost have to have. And in addition to it, if you can leverage it, it can be a big benefit.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking back to a guy I coached who was really confident, really well-dressed, in great shape, had a great business, and he had the worst Indian accent I had ever heard. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like you picture just the most fobby, you know, the Simpsons, Quickie Mart guy, you know, and like, it was so bad. And you wouldn't expect it. Like you saw this, you know, he was just like, he looked like he was just going to, you know, destroy, dominate the room, but he was, you know, not to like bag on Indians, but you know, it's like, unfortunately it has a stigma or reputation for being a really unattractive kind of, you know, strange accent. Mm-hmm. And it totally ruined him to the point where I was like, dude, just don't. He had been studying so much like dating stuff. I was like, forget all this. Just go to a speech pathologist and, you know, fix your accent because it's just killing you.
Yeah, like an acting coach or something that teaches different accents. Learn like a California bro accent.
See how that works.
So what happened? Did he lessen the accent a little bit?
You know, I didn't really hear from him after that. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe like a year or two later, he got married and he's got a really beautiful wife. So I'm guessing it worked out. Yeah.
That's something I think that like, it's almost like you have to walk a fine line with like being PC. But I think it really, when you look at it at a surface level, it's not like that. Like some people be like, oh, don't change who you are. Well, it's not about who you are. It's about how do people respond to different aspects of yourself. So like, when you go somewhere else, maybe you change your attire and dress a little bit more for the scene that you're in. And if he knows he's going out in LA or he's going out in Odessa, Ukraine or someplace like that, and people don't respond well to the accent, maybe in India they respond phenomenally. But don't be afraid to change it if you know people don't respond well. That's not being untrue to yourself. That's adapting to the environment and putting your best foot forward. I think a lot of people hear that, especially in this day and age. You're like, don't tell him to be something he's not. It has nothing to do with that. You know what I mean? And I think that cripples a lot of guys as far as not – because it takes a lot of courage to change and to try on new behaviors and new accents in this instance. And when all the culture pushes you to just be yourself, you know, it's like it's not being yourself. And it's so easy for people to not take that step. It just really makes me mad when I hear people – almost try to encourage people not to do things like that because it's not being true to yourself. I mean, that's just the surefire way to never improve in life.
Totally. That whole like kind of line of thought, like just be yourself. It's like, well, who's yourself? Like yourself is just someone who you kind of made up probably as like an early teenager, which is a collection of, you know, your parents and your friends and your culture. Like who the fuck is yourself? That person doesn't exist. Like you can change it. Like your personality isn't static. You can decide what that is. And, you know, that's such a, like a hot point. And I totally, I'm on the same page as you. Like, I hate that advice. Oh, he's not being real to himself. It's like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Right. But when in culture, it's so supported, right? It's like it's a good sound bite, right? Nobody pushes back on just be yourself, little guy, right? Everyone's like, yeah, just be yourself. Everyone hears it. That's great advice. That's great advice, champ.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody even questions it like to the level, like you said, well, what is yourself? Where does yourself stop? Was it in sixth grade when you aggregated all your different experiences and influences? Was it high school? Like, what about who you become? Like what's important is who you become in life, and you become someone by changing things. Hence the word become in indicating change. So yeah, I get it. I get it.
When I heard that, I think, I don't remember the first time I heard it, but someone was like, just be yourself. I'm like, well, fuck that. I don't really like myself that much. Like I was like a dorky, like 13-year-old. I was like, you know, a little bit chubby. And I was like, well, no one wants to hang out with the Robbie that's himself. Like, I got to put on this kind of like, you know, Joe Cool attitude sort of guy. Like, they like that guy. They don't like the Robbie that I know. Fuck that.
Right. Right. And when you put on that Joe Cool attitude, it may not feel like yourself. And odds are 90% of that facade will go. But the 10% that is effective and that feels good, once it kind of becomes you, it truly becomes who you are. It's no longer a Joe Cool show. It's, oh, that's who you've become.
Right. Yeah, totally. And it's I think that, you know, not to get like too kind of cultural or political, but I feel like within the last couple of years, like especially in the US, like there's been so much push against like the men's personal growth movement for guys to like, you know, just be confident. And it's been nice, like being obviously over here in Ukraine, not experiencing that. I don't know how much to a degree it's kind of affected guys who've been over there, but
I mean, yeah, it's see like on Twitter and stuff, like in stand-up comedy, like stand-up comedians are worried about offending people. It's just, I feel like personally, like whenever you see major cultural change, it typically is like a pendulum where it is in the wrong direction too far, and then it swings back, and then it overcorrects, and then kind of comes back and finds the equilibrium. I feel like right now we're in the overcorrecting stage with the whole PC movement and things like that. And so I think there's some good things that came from, like, you know, we compared to what was going on in the 50s and 60s. I think there's been some good changes that have come with that, but I think it's overshot now to the point that anyone's afraid to say anything that's outside of the cultural party lines.
Totally. Yeah, I watched that Chappelle stand up, and I was like applauding, you know, from behind my computer, like, thank you, fucking someone finally called all this bullshit out. Like,
I know, it's crazy. So, and he's like the only one, like, even some of these like stand-up comedians have been in the game for a long time. It's like they're doing completely different types of comedy, but it's like you can't really blame them, because, you know, Netflix probably funded them or some company, you know. If all of a sudden the what is it called, like the offense army or something, what do they call these people that just are so easily offended at anything? Like, if they what's the term? It's not offense army, probably neither of those words, but you know what I mean.
It's like, there's a word for it. There's a funny fucking term for it, but it's escaping my mind right now. It's like social justice warriors.
Or yes. Snowflakes. Social justice warriors. This is
snowflakes, and social justice warriors. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't offend those snowflakes. If they do something funny, and then the social justice warriors come from them, and then they get like a cancel culture, like there's a good chance they're going to lose their career. So you can't blame them for not doing that. What is at fault is just the entire culture, right? So the culture is allowing that to happen. So that's something that I'm hoping swings back a little bit here over the next couple of years.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious to get your take on it, because the way that I see kind of that affecting me is, you know, I'm already like a guy who's, I don't know what to call it. Like, I say whatever the fuck is going on. Like, I try to be as authentic as possible. I don't really hold back. I talk about my crazy lifestyle and the nonsense I get into. I guess I feel a little bit like more comfortable doing that from Eastern Europe than maybe I would from Southern California.
Yeah.
But buffer. I know my audience kind of appreciates that for me. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's tough, because I'm not as, you know, I'm not a celebrity. I don't have a huge following. I have enough of a following where I'm a little bit concerned that, like, you know, if someone wanted to, you know, call me out to whoever the powers that be, like, they could, you know, point the fucking, you know, the cannon at me and turn me into like the enemy. I'm curious, like, how does that affect you? Like, do you think about that stuff? Because you have a pretty big following on YouTube, and at any time, you know, you got to be worried, like, they could just shut your shit down. Like, iTunes could shut my shit down. It's a scary world we live in, you know. And there's that, I know that the more authentic and the more honest and the more kind of shocking and thought-provoking I am, the more I'll be respected by my audience. But it's almost, you know, scary to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think guys like you and I don't have any hope to run for politics in our later years. Just
exactly.
Because, can you imagine? Well, like, yeah, I mean, anytime anyone has a massive amount of content, even a guy like, let's go back to Ben Shapiro, like, he's had a talk show for years, and like, when they pull, he's very careful about his P's and Q's. And when they pull all the stuff he said years ago, it sounds like the most terrible person on the planet. So right. Like they, even in and out of context. So like when you have 200 YouTube videos or 330 podcasts like you do, it's like, they're going to be able to find some, especially when it goes back years, because culture changes and it changes quickly. So what was okay 2 years ago, now, you know, like you said, if some big media company wanted to have a heyday with you for 3 or 4 days and make you the villain, of course they could do it. So for me, I just think about, what can I do that's low-hanging fruit to protect myself against that? I'm not going to tailor everything I do to be PC because that's dry. Nobody wants to hear that. And that's not fun for me. But what I did from a long time ago is, like, on YouTube, I never use profanity. And that served me well because now, you know, they won't play ads. A lot of the ads won't be played on videos that have profanity. And they kind of basically have said they don't want that. So I don't do that, which has been a good move. Because back when I started, it's like that was kind of the cool thing because that was a platform that you could use profanity on. So everyone is doing it. But I kind of saw the writing on the wall. So I decided not to do that. And then also just staying away from politics, because when you talk about dating and culture, just like in this conversation, things very quickly go to politics, just right. Because politics is kind of like the new reality TV. Like when I was growing up, the only people that talked about politics, like your grandpa, like sitting at the TV watching C-SPAN. And now it's like WWE. It's crazy. And so, with my channel, I've transitioned from doing more like, oh, if you're going to go into a networking event and you want to meet this guy and he's a high value target, and everyone else wants to meet him, how can you be memorable without looking like a jerk, right? I used to do videos like that, love doing content like that, but that'll get a few thousand views. Whereas if you analyze famous people or politicians, that gets a lot more views. So it opens up kind of the top of funnel. So because politics is so interesting right now, I've really focused a lot on that. So a long-winded story, another thing I've done in addition to not use profanity is keep my political thoughts out of the videos. So even if I'm analyzing Trump versus Sanders or something, that the handshake battle of the century, like I'm never going to give any indication, even though people argue both sides, of which political side I'm on. So that's one way I kind of keep out of the mud, because when you show which political side you're on, it's great because it's polarizing. So you get a ton of people on that side that take your side, but then a ton of people that absolutely hate you. And I want to teach people social skills. So just because you have a different political belief than me, I don't want to turn you off and prevent you from learning from me. So that's the second thing that I've done to try to kind of keep out of this whole cultural hubbub.
Yeah, that's super smart. And not only that, but how you've kind of leveraged other people's content and turned that into really interesting content is such a genius move, because there's so many people out there that are like, I don't know how to start a business. I don't have anything good to say. I don't have a voice. But you've taken, you know, your expertise and social skills and applied it to the content that's already out there that people are already watching. Right. And use that. And I was like, fuck, this is so good. Like, that's why I really kind of got hooked on a lot of your videos. It was like, not just because the videos were good, but I was so just kind of blown away. It was almost like one of those, God damn, I should have thought of that moments.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Cause like you see these guys, like even like PewDiePie, like these guys who have been on and they're huge. It's like, what do you talk about after you've made 200 videos on dating? You've covered everything,
right?
Like there is no spin or twist that you can come up with, and people start recreating video. Oh, the 2020 version. And then they just want to shoot themselves in the head because they're so tired doing it. So this has enabled me to do two things. Number one, it's fresh content and it never stops because there's always interesting interactions to break down. And number two, and that's a huge thing. Just like I'm sure you realize, like it's unbelievable. There's not many channels that can leverage all of this stuff. Like how can you analyze totally. It from a different perspective? It's not socially, it's very tough. Maybe like a hairstylist, you could say, hey, look at this guy's hairstyle, but it doesn't fit as well as it does their social skills. But number two, when you're looking at thumbnails and click-through rates, nobody knows my dopey face. So when they see it, even though I think it's some great thumbnail, it's like, they're not gonna click on me. Now a picture of Trump, that has an incredibly high click-through rate. So even though there's a lot of people that watch my videos that just want to see Trump say something or just want to see Bernie Sanders say something, that's totally cool. But there's so many more people that see the videos that even if there's only 10% of those people that end up wanting to learn social skills, that's a whole lot more people than if 90% of people that click on the thumbnail, me teaching how to be effective at a networking event. It just opens the funnel up way, way, way more and gives me basically an unlimited amount of content going forward. So that's what, kind of why I made that move strategically.
Yeah, it's a really, really smart move. And I'm curious how many, because you're kind of like creating your own, you know, because for me, a lot of the guys who come to my show, you know, they're already kind of in the personal growth, you know, genre or in the space already, but you're pulling people who are just like, you know, some Joe Schmo who wants to see Trump say some dumb shit. And you're opening his eyes to like, oh, there's this social stuff going on that I wasn't aware of. It was kind of the experience I had when I first read Neil Strauss's book, The Game, where I was like, whoa, there's this whole like, this whole area of study that I wasn't aware of. So it's cool that you're probably pulling in a decent amount of people and showing them this other way of looking at things.
Exactly. You know, it's almost like I've thought of it before. Like, you know, on TV, like say you're watching some cable TV show and there's a Domino's pizza ad, right? It has nothing to do with the show, but you're still going to get a lot of people that order Domino's pizza because they saw that ad. So right. My ads previously, when I was doing like networking videos and social skills and vocal power videos, it was perfectly in uniform with the content, right? This video, I'm going to teach you how to use strong vocal power. If you want to learn more, I've got this program. That was great. And then a cable TV show, you know, it's a TV show, pizza, totally separated. I see this now as kind of in the middle. So it spins like one of my programs, actually, I don't think we talked about this, called the Quick and Witty Comeback Bootcamp. So I found so many people that wanted one-on-one consulting. It was because a family member, or a friend, or at school or work, someone was bullying them or putting them down, and they're just not quick on their feet and couldn't think of something to say. So right. I came up with a program that helps people specifically how to address that. So like a lot of these, like there's one debate where it was Rand Paul and Trump talking back and forth, jawing a little bit. And so at the end of that, I said, hey, by the way, if you ever kind of freeze up when people make fun of you and you can't think of something quick to say, I've got a program right here you can check out. So that lends itself pretty well. But sometimes with some of the content, you just have to kind of spin it a little bit further, like by the, you know, like something completely there. By the way, if you're feeling comfortable now, I got a social skills thing that doesn't fit as well, but it's right. still a little more congruent with the content than just like buying an ad or a random spot or a promotion, like promoting Audible or something like that.
Sure. No, that's so interesting. Can we talk a little bit about the quick and witty stuff? Because I remember seeing that on your site, and I was like, that's a genius, like, you know, everyone needs that, right? Everyone's got that fucking dick in their life who, who, you know, like, who says that thing, and you're always, you know, you get tongue-tied, and you don't say anything, and then you kick yourself, and later you think of, like, what you could have said. Damn, I should have said that.
Yeah, it's always like 5 minutes later, it's the best thing ever. It's like you would have just hammered the dude.
If I only could have thought of it then, right?
Yeah. The sad thing about that is people that get picked on are easy targets. So that one, it's not just like, oh, I couldn't think of anything, I look kind of bad. It's like then everyone in that group knows you're an easy target, and then people are going to make fun of you more and more. And then your own subconscious starts to think, God, I am an easy target. It's really a downward spiral. So I feel like that's something that is really important to kind of learn just to be a man in this world.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I experienced that a bit I think in my early like teens, where it totally did. I was always kind of like one of the best guys, like on whatever team I was on, you know, hockey, soccer, whatever. And then at one point, just kind of where my birthday fell, I was like the youngest guy and like the one of the less like skilled guys on the team just because of my age. And it was weird because I kind of went from like the big fish in the little pond to like the little fish and feeling just like everyone was making fun of me. It really downward spiraled to the point where it was like, shit, what, you know, this sucks. It's really hard to kind of recover from that. So do you have any advice on that? Or
yeah, like, I mean, surprisingly, it's really, it's not that hard to recover from that because nobody wants to pick on someone who is walking into a situation where they may get the short end of the stick. So if all of a sudden Robbie's got some pretty quick comebacks and he's cutting people down, they don't want to take that risk. There's easier people to do that. So really only takes a couple times of defending yourself verbally with a quick comeback before people are like, ah, maybe I'm going to think twice before I pick on this guy. But the problem is most people, when they get picked on, they not only don't learn how to do it, but their confidence goes down and they're less and less likely to even try. And that's how the downward spiral kind of reinforces itself.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like the whole idea, like stand up to the bully once and he'll find someone else to pick on.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's, and that's really kind of hard to get, you know, when you're in that position of inferiority, because that's the hardest thing to do is to like just do it once and then, you know, you punch him back and he goes away, but you think you're just going to get pummeled. So
right. And the problem is you have to address all these different things, because even if you have a great comeback, if it's delivered from an unconfident way, which a lot of times when people are just trying it, you could have the best thing in the world and it's going to land flat and you're going to look like a dummy. So you really need to learn how to do it. Once again, the vocal power, it's behind everything. You can deliver a pretty mediocre comeback, but if you say it with just the perfect tonality, it's going to land a lot better than one that's like scripted from a Hollywood writer that's delivered with like a weak tonality. So definitely something you got to keep in mind.
Totally. Well, a couple questions. Anything else you wanted to touch on when it comes to like vocal power, tonality? And if not, I wanted to kind of ask you more about how you grew the YouTube channel and some more like business related questions, but anything else that you wanted to cover before that?
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand it's not that, well, let me take a step back real quick. When I do private consulting, so many people will tell me I have such a weak voice just naturally, there's not much I can do about it. And almost every time they're self-limiting their voice. So they're putting on basically a 50 or 60% limit because they don't psychologically want to be heard. The problem is not the genetic voice or the physical voice they have. It's that they're not projecting. And it's not because they don't know how to project. It's because they're scared to project. So there's a lot of different facets that go into improving the power of your voice. But realizing that the biggest limiting factor is your own kind of subconscious that's telling you not to talk loud is powerful. Because let's say when you're in a Starbucks and all of a sudden you just try to order your coffee with a little more volume, you know, maybe somebody behind you can actually hear you. Maybe another employee can hear you and everything in your brain is like, don't do it. Don't be so loud. Don't be heard. You know, the tall blade of grass gets cut down, but then you do it. And then one of the other employees kind of looks over like, who is this guy? He sounds really confident. Maybe it's someone to know. Is he a celebrity? Is he a local football player? Who is this guy that is exuding this confidence? And then that little step shows your subconscious it's okay to be heard. It's okay to be a little bit louder. And you kind of give yourself permission to be louder and act more confidently. So your subconscious really takes these little step change improvements and runs with them on its own. So it's important. Don't think of it as some huge daunting task to have the voice of James Earl Jones. Just think of it as trying these little incremental changes, because your subconscious is going to help you leverage those things to naturally and organically improve. So I think that's important to understand when you're looking to improve your voice.
Yeah, that's really good applicable advice. Just, you know, speak a little bit louder. And I've experienced that living in Ukraine and studying Russian recently, because, you know, you're not so good at the language and you want to kind of talk quietly, like, you know, I'm ordering something, I'm like, oh, можно, пожалуйста, right? Because I know I'm going to probably fuck up and say something stupid. But, you know, as you're saying, I'm like, fuck, I should just be like, можно, пожалуйста, кофе без молока.
Just own the fact that half the words are totally wrong, dude.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hilarious. That's actually funny you say that, because a huge percentage of the people that buy the Vocal Power Bootcamp are English as second language speakers. And I have actually a little section that just addresses that. And almost inevitably, if you're speaking a language that isn't native, you're using such a soft, supplicative tonality that sounds so unconfident. So you really are better off just owning it. Dude, I want to be in Kiev the first time you just roll with that order at like a bar. So that'd be so great.
Dude, that's awesome. I can't wait. I'm going to go out, you know, tomorrow and definitely do that. Just like, because I already, like, as I talk, I know I'm making so many mistakes and people are always like, oh, nice accent, cute accent, you know, but like,
yeah.
Just and, you know, I've got the, like, you know, language skills of maybe like an 8-year-old at this point. So
that's not bad, dude. That's not bad at all. Russian's not an easy language.
No, I've it's tough. I've been at it for about a year and a half, and
yeah,
it's no joke. Yeah. But no, that's super applicable. I love it.
Yeah,
and I think everyone can benefit from that. Just you know, being louder and just commanding the room, and I mean,
it really is. It's so funny, like. Just being louder, sometimes it can be tacky. We've all been in a restaurant where someone is just so loud. But the strange thing is, even if someone is uncalibratedly loud, I don't know if that's the word uncalibratedly, but they're loud to an uncalibrated extent, it's annoying, but it still communicates competence, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll learn just when people are annoyed, you'll learn what's too loud. You have to do it over and over to learn kind of what that fine line is. But even I, like when I'm at a restaurant and I'm annoyed by someone being so loud, I always think about this. I'm like, well, he is being too loud and it's not appropriate. And it's rude, but he sounds a whole hell of a lot more confident than the dude that's afraid to be heard right next to him. So it's like, I would almost argue people just learning this err on the side of being too loud and calibrate back down. And I think you'd just be shocked just by turning up the volume and not changing anything else in your tonality, how people perceive you and start assigning different high status attributes to you simply based on that.
Yeah, that's the, you know, it's just by being loud, it's crazy how much that can impact it. Is there anything else in terms of like tonality or accents or other like weird shit people do that they're maybe not aware of that you could touch on?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a business setting, people typically, well, not just a business setting, it really shines there, but people typically speak with a much more supplicative tone than they think. So when people record themselves and then ask one of their friends or family members, who do you think I'm talking to? Is it someone who's a peer at my same social level? Is it a boss or is it a subordinate, someone who I'm above? They typically feel like they're speaking with a rapport neutral tone, which is the way you talk to a buddy, the way I'm speaking to you. And they actually sound supplicative, like, hey, like they think the other person has higher status. And when you speak to someone in a supplicative tone, no matter what you're saying, what you're communicating to them at a subcommunicative level is, I think you're higher status than me. You probably want to treat me a little lower status, probably don't pay me too much mind, probably don't respect what I'm saying, or just treat me kind of like you would a little kid that doesn't mean very much. That is what you're communicating. And people think they're speaking at a peer-to-peer level, but they're speaking like that. And they wonder why people just automatically kind of categorize them as a little bit lower status, or, oh, that guy's, people just seem to be a jerk to me. You know, I don't know. They just feel like everyone feels like they're better than me. Well, that's because you're communicating, you're subcommunicating to them, you're better than me, treat me that way. You know, it's your fault. You are treated the way that you tell people to treat you by both your voice and your subcommunication. So I think that's important to understand. It's a kind of a step out of the victim mentality. Like, you're at fault for the fact that people treat you poorly because you're communicating to them to treat you poorly. When you make some little changes in your tonality, in the way that you approach things, people will automatically treat you like you're high status. Like, the other end of that is very powerful, but you have to learn how to flip it.
Totally. Yeah. I remember you did a bit. It was maybe the first YouTube thing I saw you do. I'm going to fuck up the names and blank on it, but it was the two dudes that do a shitload of social media marketing, kind of going head to head.
Grant Cardone.
Yes.
And Ty Lopez.
Grant Cardone. I remember watching that and be like, this motherfucker, he's such a, like, he was cutting like Ty Lopez off every time. And I loved how you called it out.
Yeah.
And he's just such a, like, just a, you know, like, I was getting pissed off, like, watching it. This is why I really loved your commentary, because it was just so ridiculous, like, dude, how he was treating Ty.
He does that to everyone. He does it to his wife. He does it to, like, Tony Robbins. Like, that's his shtick. But I think it served him well, because you only cut off people that you do feel like you are the same or a higher social status of. So, like, people that don't know him, like, who's this crazy marketing guy? But he displays that confidence in the face of their high status. I think people just slot him as a high status guy. So it's a super annoying behavior. And I almost think the only reason he's risen up is, I mean, clearly he has a successful real estate business and he's clearly a smart guy. But I can't help but think that's a big reason he's been able to rise. It's just because people are like, oh, this guy must have something going because he's cutting off these famous people. Like, he's the man.
Totally.
I thought it was kind of important to point that out.
No, because I watched his real estate stuff and I'm like, I've got a big background in real estate. I'm like, this guy is not saying anything interesting. He's not saying anything new. he's just fucking like being a dick to people that have good stuff to say.
Yeah, and, really? No, that's hilarious. That is his whole MO, man. That's awesome. Yeah,
I didn't really realize that until I watched your video, because I had just blown him off for like, I was like, fuck this guy. He's just a fucking douchebag. Everything he's saying is just hot air. Yeah. And I never paid attention to him. And then when I watched your breakdown, I was like, that's why he's so popular. What the fuck?
Yeah. Isn't it weird, dude? It's weird. Yeah.
Dude, there's got to be so many guys like that in just kind of in like similar business to us, just kind of like talking heads, or I mean, not that we're that, but people that are in the information marketing game. Right. Yeah. I think it kind of gives the whole industry a bad rap to a degree, but it's also, you know, you can kind of look at it from that angle, or you could look at it from the angle of like, just be high status and, you know, that can be enough.
Exactly. And even more of a cheat code, it's like, what if you can just bypass the whole thing and just doing that one thing, you display high status. Like, you aren't even high status. You don't even know high status communication, but you just know when you disagree with people and interrupt them, it looks high status. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, I can't really knock him for applying that. Like, I love to teach shortcuts and things like that. It is real. Like, and another video I have like talks about how if when someone's telling you something, you just respond with okay, it kind of sounds like you're qualifying what they're saying to you, right? You're the boss. Like, they're saying, yeah, we went out to dinner the other day. Even if they're not, and you're like, okay. It kind of just naturally positions you as the one who's above them. And so there's little hacks like that, like disagreeing with people, talking over people that do that. And they just work. And it's kind of a great way to get started. It's just super annoying when people use them too much.
Totally. I had this client who would always, he would kind of listen to everything I said with a condescending sort of eye stare. And then he would pause after I finished. He would take a second. He'd go, okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Oh, and maybe, okay, then he followed with, that's fair. Okay.
That's fair. And maybe want to fucking example. Punch him in the face. Yeah, I was like, what do you mean that's fair? Fuck you. Like, shut up. Like, who are you? The Supreme Court? Like, that's fair? Like, that,
yeah.
I was telling you that you were creeping this girl out, and you're saying, yeah, that's fair.
Oh, like, that's his response to every, dude, I kind of love that. Like, that's, I mean, super annoying. And like, someone who's like, you're teaching him, it's super inappropriate for him to take that kind of a response, like, for sure. But like, someone that you're just meeting, like, I always like to teach things that if someone acts like they're higher than you, how to reestablish that dynamic, that interaction equilibrium, I call it. So if someone is like talking down to you, or they can tell you, they kind of think you're not anyone to be reckoned with, then that's when you pepper in that stuff. Like, that's fair, okay, or talking over them. You don't use that stuff out of the gate, but that's kind of a good one to use. I like that.
Yeah, it was really, it totally threw me for a bunch of curveballs. Like, every time you do it, to the point where I had to stop him, like, dude, every time you tell me that's fair, I want to punch you in the face. Like, you can't say that anymore. Like, you're coming across as
what were you gonna say? Coming across as what?
Just like, just really condescending.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Exactly.
But like you said, that's so powerful though, because I had the platform to say that to him, because I'm his coach. He's paying me for advice. But had I not had that platform, I would have just felt like, fuck, like, this guy's, you know, he's kind of got the one up on me.
It's a great example. Like, he probably learned that was effective, right? So he probably maybe had lower status and learned when he said that people treat him high status, but he hadn't learned the finesse yet that that's not appropriate in all situations, but he hadn't learned that yet, right? So he just continued to use it. And you kind of, good that you verbalize that to him, to realize, you know, that may be good in 60% of situations, but when someone's teaching you or someone is doing you a solid or something, that's an inappropriate application of that kind of high status behavior.
Totally. Yeah. Cause sometimes, you know, I'd say something that, you know, I would say something that he would, that maybe kind of changed his opinion or went against the grain of what he already knew. So the response of that's fair, like, oh, wow, that's fair. Like, that made sense. And I felt good about that response. You know, it made me feel like acknowledged versus other times. It just made me feel like, like railroaded. So,
yeah, it's funny. The last thing I'll say about that is like these little kind of shortcuts that people figure out. They're really interesting to me. And I have a buddy who's a friend of a friend in Dallas, Texas. And he is literally just the most aloof person ever to everything. Like just net. And I think to a point, being aloof can be a positive, right? You don't want to, like, when you're lower status, you don't want to act like you're super impressed or super excited about things because you're probably doing that too much already. But this guy takes it 100 times over and just nothing, like no reaction to anything, not in a good way. But it's interesting when you see him meet new people, how almost everyone interprets that as being high status. And then they kind of start fighting to kind of demonstrate that they're cool and high status too. And it immediately establishes a frame of him being in the higher status position just by being demonstratively aloof all the time. I don't think that's the right thing. And I don't think that that's fair is the right thing or okay is the right thing or cutting people off or disagreeing with people. But I think there's definitely time to use those, to have those kind of moves in your skill set.
Yeah, especially if he's got the social status to be in a position where you can be aloof as well. Because if obviously, right, if he was low status and not in that social position, he would just be irrelevant, right?
Right. Nobody would even, yeah, exactly. He'd be completely forgettable. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, and that's always like, I've noticed that a lot too, just kind of some of the social circles I run in, you get a lot of really narcissistic people, you know, models, photographers. They're so insanely aloof and they're just so socially retarded that you're like, how did they get in this position in the first place? And it's like, okay, they were just really, really good at being beautiful or taking mm-hmm. really good photographs. And now they're in a really high social status environment, but they're still weird, which is kind of shocking because right. most people in that environment are very, you know, high status and they're very social.
Yep. Do you think, like, I've seen that a lot. I almost feel like it's full circle. Like when you first grow in status and start to get confidence, just like the pendulum argument, like we're talking about, you overdo it and you become too aloof and you're too cool guy and you're not interested in anything and you don't want to engage. And then like, once you have a true, like incredibly high level of confidence, you're not worried about that, right? There's something underneath that that's more powerful. And then again, you can be, you know, almost even a step toward supplication, just because people can sense it's coming from such a position of power. I don't want people to think that you should be supplicative, but you know what I mean? Like the people who are truly yeah. like the highest status, they're usually like super friendly and nice and not worried about talking about anything about status. Like they just truly want to engage, but it takes like the highest level of confidence to come back from that.
Yeah, I think it reminds me of the whole like those four stages of like unconscious incompetence all the way to like, you know, whatever it is, unconscious competence. And in the right. middle you have like, right. So at the end, it's like you're not aware of it, but you're totally competent and you don't have to even think about it sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good analogy. I remember hearing that.
Yeah. Cause if you're thinking about it, you know, if you have to first realize you're low status and like realize you're getting bullied, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff you talked about earlier is really powerful because like, okay, like what are you going to do when this guy is, you know, totally making fun of you? If you have that quick comeback and you got to practice that a few times and you get it, right? And then you apply it a few times, then it kind of becomes natural. Then you stop worrying about it. And then you're just kind of applying that all the way. Then you get mm-hmm. to the point where it's just like, that's just kind of who you are. And you're just kind of giving value all the time. You're not worried about it. Then uh-huh. yeah, I guess you just kind of come across that way.
And that's that's the level of unconscious competence, right? That's four.
Right. Yeah. yeah. That's the highest level.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like when people have reached that, like, can you think of anyone, you don't need to say them, but just like super confident, right? They've got it together. Like they, even though they're super nice, sometimes over the top nice, you can just sense it's not someone to mess with. Like if you were to go too far, like they would immediately check someone with no problem at all. Even though you've maybe never seen them do that, you can just sense that.
Totally. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of what we were talking about earlier. Like I think Grant Cardone, he's not at that level. I think he's like, he's manipulatively using conscious competence, which is like level three. Uh-huh. To like grow his, you know, his channel, or maybe he's just so good at it now, but you know, he just doesn't come across to me as like some guy I want to hang out with. He's just a dick.
Like, I know what you mean. Yeah. Doesn't it feel like he's still trying to prove something? Like he's always talking about he's buying jets with cash. And I think totally. In his defense, like his whole thing, like so many people that watch his stuff are probably like biz op guys. They want to learn how to make $1 million. So I get that a lot of that is probably strategic to grow his brand and everything. But you can tell, like, all he talks about, and it's like, I'm starting to think, how we, like, he's sitting down with these.
He's all hype.
What's that?
He's just all hype, you know?
Yeah.
He's just like nothing
billions
but hype.
Of dollars, yeah. Like, just hype. He's a, he, right. And then, and I shouldn't say he's just a hype man, because I don't know that much about it, but that's definitely a big component of his personality. Like you said, he doesn't seem like a chill guy you'd want to go out on Friday and get a couple beers with and just kind of shoot the shit at all.
Yeah, he just seems like he's going to attack you no matter what. Right. He's going to be that, like, the guy who's just going to, like, be a dick no matter what. And, you know, I don't want to be too harsh of a critic. I've only seen him in, like, 5 or 6 videos, and then I just kind of wrote him off. I was like, whatever. Not interested.
Right. And, but, and you got to point out, he's killing it. I mean, he's super successful.
Totally.
He's growing his brand. He's way bigger than any of my businesses. So I'm not doing that. But, like, I think it's fair, people that put themselves, once again, in those positions and put out content, I think it's fair to assess them. And it just seems to me like he's someone who always has to feel like he has higher status. He can't ever just roll with the punches, which actually indicates a little bit lower level of confidence.
Totally. Yeah. And like you said, it could be, you know, he knows his audience really well, and he's really done a good job of, like, going after that niche of people.
Right.
That, right. that resonate with his message and that, that need that, you know, that sort of mentor that he, that mentorship that he offers. But then you, you said, like, who's someone else? And I thought of Tony Robbins. Like, Tony Robbins never comes across to me like he's being unauthentic or trying anything. Like, he's, he just seems like a really solid dude, even though, you know, he gets a lot of shit out there as well, but he,
he's a great example.
Yeah.
He doesn't ever feel like he's worried about his status versus other people, but clearly he has incredibly high status and confidence.
Totally.
Right.
And, you know, I've watched a lot of his stuff. I've never been to a seminar or anything, but I've watched a lot of his stuff, and, you know, he's very comfortable talking about, you know, his faults and his insecurities and all that stuff. So
yeah,
he's been, a big mentor, I think, to a lot of people in this space.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. Yeah. I'm just kind of thinking it through as we're talking, and I just kind of, I'm thinking about Tony Robbins versus Grant Cardone. I think at this point, neither one of us are going to be invited to that 10X conference. So we might as well be honest about it. But, like, imagine someone walking down the street with a friend, and someone they don't know says some derogatory comment about him. Like, the 10X book was terrible, or to Tony Robbins, like, The Power Within is terrible. Like, you see a guy like Tony Robbins, like, literally not even, like, in one ear, out the other, never thinking about it again. And you see a guy like Grant Cardone needing to address that because nobody can talk down to him, right? It's like, I don't know if it's an ego thing, but I think that's kind of an interesting way to think about it when you're trying to assess, like, true confidence. Would somebody feel the need to come back at someone who truly is meaningless to them just to do it? Or would they be able to not address it? And then, most importantly, never think about it again. Like, would it eat them up for the rest of the night? Because, oh, they should have said something. Who, how dare he say something about me? Or is it someone who truly would realize, I don't even know who that guy is. It means nothing in my life. I'm never going to think about it again.
Yeah, that's a good example. I think I would put my money on the fact that Grant would have to say something.
I feel that way too, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, it's been, like, so much fun. I feel like we could go on forever talking about this. It's been fucking great. Yeah. So tell us, you know, where can people find more about you and dig deeper into this stuff?
Yeah, I would just, I don't really do anything with, I mean, I have a website, but I don't do much with it. Just check out a video on YouTube and see what you think of it. I'm spending almost all my time now on putting videos, assessing and analyzing trending topics. So when these debates, I'll tell you what, when these debates happen, when Trump is going to be against whoever the Democratic nominee is, it's going to be unbelievable. Because I don't care what your position is politically, watching Trump debate people and hearing him talk trash is so funny, because these politicians are not used to people playing that way. They're used to the very formal kind of language and rhetoric. And it's like, it's kind of like at a bar. Like, if you send any politician to, like, a cool bar, like, imagine, like, someone downtown West Hollywood, a politician, they would just get torn apart because they're not.
Yeah, they're going to show up in a suit.
Exactly. And anyone that makes fun of them, they're like, who is this fine man trying to cut me down? Like, they don't know the real world, where Trump is the kind of guy that, you know, he calls people ugly and short and fat. And so I think it's just going to be phenomenal. So basically, if you want to see me analyze stuff like that and then talk about what you can learn from it socially, check out the YouTube channel.
Well, I'm definitely going to tune in. I can't wait. So. I love it, brother. Thanks so much for coming on, and love to have you back on soon. It's been awesome.
Yeah, dude, this is a ton of fun. I think we covered a lot. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.